21. Monks, if you keep this advice on the simile of the saw constantly in mind, do you see any course of speech, trivial or gross, that you could not endure? No, venerable sir. Therefore, monks, you should keep this advice on the simile of the saw constantly in mind. That will lead to your welfare and happiness for a long time. From Majjhima Nikaya 21, Kakakupama Sutta 1, 126 through 127, 129. Part 7, The Six Recollections. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Kapilavatthu, in the Banyan Tree Monastery. Then Mahanama the Sakyan approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side and said, Venerable Sir, in what way does a noble disciple often dwell when he has arrived at the fruit and understood the teaching? When, Mahanama, a noble disciple has arrived at the fruit and understood the teaching, he often dwells in such a way as this. Here, a noble disciple recollects the Tathagata thus. The Blessed One is an Arahant, perfectly enlightened, accomplished in true knowledge and conduct, fortunate, knower of the world, unsurpassed leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of devas and humans, the Enlightened One, the Blessed One. When a noble disciple recollects the Tathagata thus, on that occasion his mind is not obsessed by lust, hatred, or delusion. His mind is straight, with the Tathagata as its object. A noble disciple whose mind is straight gains the inspiration of the meaning, the inspiration of the Dhamma, gains gladness connected with the Dhamma. When he is gladdened, rapture arises. For one uplifted by rapture, the body becomes calm. One calm in body feels happy. For one who is happy, the mind becomes concentrated. This is called a noble disciple who dwells evenly amid an uneven population, who dwells without affliction amid an afflicted population, who has entered upon the stream of the Dhamma and develops recollection of the Buddha. Further, Mahanama, a noble disciple recollects the Dhamma thus. The Dhamma is well expounded by the Blessed One, directly visible, immediate, inviting one to come and see, worthy of application, to be personally experienced by the wise. When a noble disciple recollects the Dhamma thus, on that occasion, his mind is not obsessed by lust, hatred, or delusion. His mind is straight, with the Dhamma as its object. This is called a noble disciple who dwells evenly amid an uneven population, who dwells without affliction amid an afflicted population, who has entered upon the stream of the Dhamma and develops recollection of the Dhamma. Further, Mahanama, a noble disciple recollects the Sangha thus. The Sangha of the Blessed One's disciples is practicing the good way, practicing the straight way, practicing the true way, practicing the proper way. That is, the four pairs of persons, the eight types of individuals. This Sangha of the Blessed One's disciples is worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, worthy of reverential salutation, the unsurpassed field of merit for the world. When a noble disciple recollects the Sangha thus, on that occasion his mind is not obsessed by lust, hatred, or delusion. His mind is straight, with the Sangha as its object. This is called a noble disciple who dwells evenly amid an uneven population, who dwells without affliction amid an afflicted population, who has entered upon the stream of the Dhamma and develops recollection of the Sangha. Further, Mahanama, a noble disciple recollects his own moral discipline thus. I possess the moral virtues dear to the noble ones, unbroken, untorn, unblemished, unmodeled, freeing, praised by the wise, ungrasped, leading to concentration. When a noble disciple recollects his own moral discipline thus, on that occasion his mind is not obsessed by lust, hatred, or delusion. His mind is straight, with virtue as its object. This is called a noble disciple who dwells evenly amid an uneven population, who dwells without affliction amid an afflicted population, who has entered upon the stream of the Dhamma and develops recollection of moral discipline. Further, Mahanama, a noble disciple recollects his own generosity thus. It is a gain for me. It is well gained by me that in a population obsessed by the stain of stinginess, I dwell at home with a mind devoid of the stain of stinginess, freely generous, open-handed, delighting in relinquishment, one devoted to charity, delighting in giving and sharing. When a noble disciple recollects his own generosity thus, on that occasion his mind is not obsessed by lust, hatred, or delusion. His mind is straight, with generosity as its object. This is called a noble disciple who dwells evenly amid an uneven population, who dwells without affliction amid an afflicted population, who has entered upon the stream of the Dhamma and develops recollection of generosity. Further, Mahanama, a noble disciple develops the recollection of the devas thus. There are devas in the various heavenly realms. There is found in me such faith, moral discipline, learning, generosity, and wisdom, as those devas possessed, because of which, when they passed away from this world, they were reborn there. When a noble disciple recollects his own faith, moral discipline, learning, generosity, and wisdom, as well as those of the devas, on that occasion his mind is not obsessed by lust, hatred, or delusion. His mind is straight, with the devas as its object. This is called a noble disciple who dwells evenly amid an uneven population, who dwells without affliction amid an afflicted population, who has entered upon the stream of the Dhamma and develops recollection of the devas. A noble disciple, Mahanama, who has arrived at the fruit and understood the teaching, often dwells in just this way. Anguttara Nikaya, 6.10, 3, 284 through 288. Part 8. The Four Establishments of Mindfulness. 1. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living in the Kuru country, when there was a town of the Kurus named Kamasadama. There he addressed the monks thus. Monks, venerable sir, they replied. The Blessed One said this. 2. Monks, this is the one-way path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the passing away of pain and dejection, for the attainment of the true way, for the realization of Nibbana, namely the four establishments of mindfulness. 3. What are the four? Here, monks, a monk dwells contemplating the body in the body, ardent, clearly comprehending, and mindful, having subdued longing and dejection in regard to the world. He dwells contemplating feelings in feelings, ardent, clearly comprehending, and mindful, having subdued longing and dejection in regard to the world. He dwells contemplating mind in mind, ardent, clearly comprehending, and mindful, having subdued longing and dejection in regard to the world. He dwells contemplating phenomena in phenomena, ardent, clearly comprehending, and mindful, having subdued longing and dejection in regard to the world. Contemplation of the body. 1. Mindfulness of breathing. 4. And how, monks, does a monk dwell contemplating the body in the body? Here, a monk, gone to the forest, to the foot of a tree, or to an empty hut, sits down. Having folded his legs crosswise, straightened his body, and established mindfulness in front of him, just mindful he breathes in, mindful he breathes out. Breathing in long, he understands, I breathe in long. Or breathing out long, he understands, I breathe out long. Breathing in short, he understands, I breathe in short. Or breathing out short, he understands, I breathe out short. He trains thus. I will breathe in, experiencing the whole body. He trains thus. I will breathe out, experiencing the whole body. He trains thus. I will breathe in, tranquilizing the bodily formation. He trains thus. I will breathe out, tranquilizing the bodily formation. Just as a skilled lathe worker or his apprentice, when making a long turn, understands, I make a long turn, or when making a short turn, understands, I make a short turn. So too, breathing in long, a monk understands, I breathe in long. He He trains thus, I will breathe out, tranquilizing the bodily formation. 5. In this way he dwells contemplating the body in the body internally, or he dwells contemplating the body in the body externally, or he dwells contemplating the body in the body, both internally and externally. Or else he dwells contemplating in the body its nature of arising, or he dwells contemplating in the body its nature of vanishing, or he dwells contemplating in the body its nature of both arising and vanishing. Or else mindfulness that there is a body is simply established in him to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and repeated mindfulness, and he dwells independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That is how a monk dwells contemplating the body in the body. 2. The Four Postures. 6. Again, monks, when walking, a monk understands, I am walking. When standing, he understands, I am standing. When sitting, he understands, I am sitting. When lying down, he understands, I am lying down. Or he understands accordingly, however his body is disposed. 7. In this way he dwells contemplating the body in the body internally, externally, and both internally and externally. And he dwells independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That, too, is how a monk dwells contemplating the body in the body. 3. Clear comprehension. 8. Again, monks, a monk is one who acts with clear comprehension when going forward and returning, who acts with clear comprehension when looking ahead and looking away, who acts with clear comprehension when bending and stretching his limbs, who acts with clear comprehension when wearing his robes and carrying his outer robe and bowl, who acts with clear comprehension when eating, drinking, chewing, and tasting, who acts with clear comprehension when defecating and urinating, who acts with clear comprehension when walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, talking, and keeping silent. 9. In this way he dwells contemplating the body in the body internally, externally, and both internally and externally. And he dwells independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That, too, is how a monk dwells contemplating the body in the body. 4. Unattractiveness of the body. 10. Again, monks, a monk reviews this same body up from the soles of the feet and down from the top of the hair. Bounded by skin, as full of many kinds of impurity, thus, in this body there are head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, diaphragm, spleen, lungs, intestines, mesentery, stomach, feces, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, grease, spittle, snot, oil of the joints, and urine. Just as though there were a bag with an opening at both ends full of many sorts of grain, such as hill rice, red rice, beans, peas, millet, and white rice, and a man with good eyes were to open it and review it thus. This is hill rice, this is red rice, these are beans, these are peas, this is millet, this is white rice. So too, a monk reviews this same body, as full of many kinds of impurity thus. In this body there are head hairs and urine. 11. In this way he dwells contemplating the body in the body, internally, externally, and both internally and externally. And he dwells independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That, too, is how a monk dwells contemplating the body in the body. 5. Elements. 12. Again, monks, a monk reviews this same body, however it is placed, however disposed, as consisting of elements, thus. In this body there are the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the air element. Just as though a skilled butcher or his apprentice had killed a cow and were seated at the crossroads with it cut up into pieces, so too a monk reviews this same body as consisting of elements thus. In this body there are the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the air element. 13. In this way he dwells contemplating the body in the body internally, externally and both internally and externally, and he dwells independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That too is how a monk dwells, contemplating the body in the body. 6-14. The Nine Charnel Ground Contemplations. 14. Again, monks, as though he were to see a corpse thrown aside in a charnel ground, 1, 2, or 3 days dead, bloated, livid, and oozing matter, a monk compares this same body with it thus. This body, too, is of the same nature. It will be like that. It is not exempt from that fate. 15. In this way, he dwells contemplating the body in the body internally, externally, and both internally and externally. And he dwells independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That, too, is how a monk dwells contemplating the body in the body. 16. Again, as though he were to see a corpse thrown aside in a charnel ground, being devoured by crows, hawks, vultures, dogs, jackals, or various kinds of worms, a monk compares this same body with it thus. This body, too, is of the same nature. It will be like that. It is not exempt from that fate. 17. That, too, is how a monk dwells contemplating the body in the body. 18-24. Again, as though he were to see a corpse thrown aside in a charnel ground, a skeleton with flesh and blood, held together with sinews, a fleshless skeleton smeared with blood, held together with sinews, a skeleton without flesh and blood, held together with sinews, disconnected bones scattered in all directions, here a hand bone, there a foot bone, here a shin bone, there a thigh bone, here a hip bone, there a backbone, here the skull. A monk compares this same body with it thus. This body too is of the same nature. It will be like that. It is not exempt from that fate. 25. That too is how a monk dwells contemplating the body in the body. 26-30. Again, as though he were to see a corpse thrown aside in a charnel ground, bones bleached white, the color of shells, bones heaped up, bones more than a year old, rotted and crumbled to dust, a monk compares this same body with it thus. This body, too, is of the same nature. It will be like that. It is not exempt from that fate. 31. In this way he dwells contemplating the body in the body internally, or he dwells contemplating the body in the body externally, or he dwells contemplating the body in the body both internally and externally, or else he dwells contemplating in the body its nature of arising, or he dwells contemplating in the body its nature of vanishing, or he dwells contemplating in the body its nature of both arising and vanishing. Or else mindfulness that there is a body is simply established in him to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and repeated mindfulness, and he dwells independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That, too, is how a monk dwells contemplating the body in the body. Contemplation of feeling. And how, monks, does a monk dwell contemplating feelings in feelings? Here, when feeling a pleasant feeling, a monk understands, I feel a pleasant feeling. When feeling a painful feeling, he understands, I feel a painful feeling. When feeling a neither painful nor pleasant feeling, he understands, I feel a neither painful nor pleasant feeling. When feeling a carnal pleasant feeling, he understands, I feel a carnal pleasant feeling. When feeling a spiritual pleasant feeling, he understands, I feel a spiritual pleasant feeling. When feeling a carnal painful feeling, he understands, I feel a carnal painful feeling. When feeling a spiritual painful feeling, he understands, I feel a spiritual painful feeling. When feeling a carnal neither painful nor pleasant feeling, he understands, I feel a carnal neither painful nor pleasant feeling. When feeling a spiritual neither painful nor pleasant feeling, he understands, I feel a spiritual neither painful nor pleasant feeling. 33. In this way he dwells contemplating feelings in feelings internally, or he dwells contemplating feelings in feelings externally, or he dwells contemplating feelings in feelings both internally and externally. Or else he dwells contemplating in feelings their nature of arising, or he dwells contemplating in feelings their nature of vanishing, or he dwells contemplating in feelings their nature of both arising and vanishing. Or else mindfulness that there is feeling is simply established in him to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and repeated mindfulness. And he dwells independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That is how a monk dwells contemplating feelings in feelings. Contemplation of mind. 34. And how, monks, does a monk dwell contemplating mind in mind? Here a monk understands a mind with lust as a mind with lust, and a mind without lust as a mind without lust. He understands a mind with hatred as a mind with hatred, and a mind without hatred as a mind without hatred. He understands a mind with delusion as a mind with delusion, and a mind without delusion as a mind without delusion. He understands a contracted mind as contracted, and a distracted mind as distracted. He understands an exalted mind as exalted, and an unexalted mind as unexalted. He understands a surpassable mind as surpassable, and an unsurpassable mind as unsurpassable. He understands a concentrated mind as concentrated, and an unconcentrated mind as unconcentrated. He understands a liberated mind as liberated, and an unliberated mind as unliberated. 35. In this way he dwells contemplating mind in mind internally, or he dwells contemplating mind in mind externally, or he dwells contemplating mind in mind both internally and externally. Or else he dwells contemplating in mind its nature of arising, or he dwells contemplating in mind its nature of vanishing, or he dwells contemplating in mind its nature of both arising and vanishing. Or else, mindfulness that there is mind is simply established in him to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and repeated mindfulness, and he dwells independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That is how a monk dwells contemplating mind as mind. Contemplation of phenomena. 1. The five hindrances. 36. And how, monks, does a monk dwell contemplating phenomena in phenomena? Here, a monk dwells contemplating phenomena in phenomena in terms of the five hindrances. And how does a monk dwell contemplating phenomena in terms of the five hindrances? Here, when there is sensual desire in him, a monk understands, there is sensual desire in me. Or when there is no sensual desire in him, he understands, there is no sensual desire in me. And he also understands how unarisen sensual desire arises, and how arisen sensual desire is abandoned, and how abandoned sensual desire does not arise again in the future. When there is ill will in him, when there is dullness and drowsiness in him, when there is restlessness and remorse in him, when there is doubt in him, a monk understands, there is doubt in me. Or when there is no doubt in him, he understands, there is no doubt in me. And he also understands how the unarisen doubt arises, and how arisen doubt is abandoned, and how abandoned doubt does not arise again in the future. 37. In this way he dwells contemplating phenomena internally, or he dwells contemplating phenomena externally, or he dwells contemplating phenomena both internally and externally. Or else he dwells contemplating in phenomena their nature of arising, or he dwells contemplating in phenomena their nature of vanishing, or he dwells contemplating in phenomena their nature of both arising and vanishing. Or else mindfulness that there are phenomena is simply established in him to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and repeated mindfulness. And he dwells independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That is how a monk dwells contemplating phenomena, in terms of the five hindrances. 2. The five aggregates. 38. Again, monks, a monk dwells contemplating phenomena in terms of the five aggregates subject to clinging. And how does a monk dwell contemplating phenomena in terms of the five aggregates affected by clinging? Here a monk understands, such is form, such its origin, such its passing away, such is feeling, such its origin, such its passing away, such is perception, such its origin, such its passing away. Such are the volitional formations, such their origin, such their passing away. Such is consciousness, such its origin, such its passing away. 39. In this way he dwells contemplating phenomena in phenomena internally, externally, and both internally and externally, and he dwells independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That is how a monk dwells contemplating phenomena in phenomena, in terms of the five aggregates subject to clinging. 3. The six sense bases. 40. Again, monks, a monk dwells contemplating phenomena in phenomena, in terms of the six internal and external sense bases. And how does a monk dwell contemplating phenomena, in terms of the six internal and external sense bases? Here a monk understands the eye, he understands forms, and he understands the fetter that arises dependent on both. And he also understands how the unarisen fetter arises, and how the arisen fetter is abandoned, and how the abandoned fetter does not arise again in the future. He understands the ear, he understands sounds, he understands the nose, he understands odors, he understands the tongue, he understands flavors, he understands the body, he understands tactile objects, he understands the mind, he understands phenomena, and he understands the fetter that arises dependent on both. And he also understands how the unarisen fetter arises, and how the arisen fetter is abandoned, and how the abandoned fetter does not arise again in the future. 41. In this way he dwells contemplating phenomena, internally, externally, and both internally and externally. And he dwells independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That is how a monk dwells contemplating phenomena, in terms of the six internal and external sense bases. 4. The seven enlightenment factors. 42. Again, monks, a monk dwells contemplating phenomena, in terms of the seven enlightenment factors. And how does a monk dwell contemplating phenomena, in terms of the seven enlightenment factors? Here, when there is the mindfulness enlightenment factor in him, a monk understands, there is the mindfulness enlightenment factor in me. Or when there is no mindfulness enlightenment factor in him, he understands, there is no mindfulness enlightenment factor in me. And he also understands how the unarisen mindfulness enlightenment factor arises, and how the arisen mindfulness enlightenment factor comes to fulfillment by development. When there is the discrimination of phenomena enlightenment factor in him, when there is the energy enlightenment factor in him, when there is the rapture enlightenment factor in him, when there is the tranquility enlightenment factor in him, when there is the concentration enlightenment factor in him, when there is the equanimity enlightenment factor in him, a monk understands, there is the equanimity enlightenment factor in me. Or when there is no equanimity enlightenment factor in him, he understands, there is no equanimity enlightenment factor in me. And he also understands how the unarisen equanimity enlightenment factor arises, and how the arisen equanimity enlightenment factor comes to fulfillment by development. 43. In this way he dwells contemplating phenomena, internally, externally, and both internally and externally, and he dwells independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That is how a monk dwells contemplating phenomena, in terms of the seven enlightenment factors. 5. The Four Noble Truths. 44. Again, monks, a monk dwells contemplating phenomena, in terms of the Four Noble Truths. And how does a monk dwell contemplating phenomena, in terms of the Four Noble Truths? Here a monk understands as it really is. This is suffering. This is the origin of suffering. This is the cessation of suffering. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. 45. In this way he dwells contemplating phenomena, internally, or he dwells contemplating phenomena, externally, or he dwells contemplating phenomena, both internally and externally. or else he dwells contemplating in phenomena their nature of arising, or he dwells contemplating in phenomena their nature of vanishing, or he dwells contemplating in phenomena their nature of both arising and vanishing. Or else mindfulness that there are phenomena is simply established in him to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and repeated mindfulness. And he dwells independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That is how a monk dwells contemplating phenomena in terms of the Four Noble Truths. Conclusion. 46. Monks, if anyone should develop these four establishments of mindfulness in such a way for 7 years, one of two fruits could be expected for him, either final knowledge here and now, or if there is a trace of clinging left, non-returning. Let alone 7 years, monks, if anyone should develop these four establishments of mindfulness in such a way for 6 years, for 5 years, for 4 years, for 3 years, for 2 years, for 1 year, one of two fruits could be expected for him, either final knowledge here and now, or if there is a trace of clinging left, non-returning. Let alone 1 year, monks. If anyone should develop these four establishments of mindfulness in such a way for 7 months, for 6 months, for 5 months, for 4 months, for 3 months, for 2 months, for 1 month, for half a month, one of two fruits could be expected for him, either final knowledge here and now, or if there is a trace of clinging left, non-returning. Let alone half a month, monks. If anyone should develop these four establishments of mindfulness in such a way for 7 days, one of two fruits could be expected for him, either final knowledge here and now, or if there is a trace of clinging left, non-returning. 47. So it was with reference to this that it was said, monks, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the passing away of pain and dejection, for the attainment of the true way, for the realization of Nibbana, namely, the four establishments of mindfulness. That is what the Blessed One said. The monks were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. Majjhima Nikaya 10, Satipatthana Sutta, 1, 55-63. Part 9. Mindfulness of Breathing. At Savatthi, the Venerable Ananda approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side and said, Venerable Sir, is there one thing which, when developed and cultivated, fulfills four things? And four things which, when developed and cultivated, fulfills seven things? And seven things, when developed and cultivated, fulfills two things? There is, Ananda, one thing which, when developed and cultivated, fulfills four things, and four things which, when developed and cultivated, fulfill seven things, and seven things which, when developed and cultivated, fulfill two things. But, Venerable Sir, what is the one thing which, when developed and cultivated, fulfills four things, and the four things which, when developed and cultivated, fulfill seven things, and the seven things which, when developed and cultivated, fulfill two things? Concentration by mindfulness of breathing, Ananda, is the one thing which, when developed and cultivated, fulfills the four establishments of mindfulness. The four establishments of mindfulness, when developed and cultivated, fulfill the seven factors of enlightenment. The seven factors of enlightenment, when developed and cultivated, fulfill true knowledge and liberation. 1. Fulfilling the four establishments of mindfulness. How, Ananda, is concentration by mindfulness of breathing developed and cultivated so that it fulfills the four establishments of mindfulness? Here, Ananda, a monk having gone to the forest, to the foot of a tree, or to an empty hut, sits down. Having folded his legs crosswise, straightened his body, and set up mindfulness in front of him. Just mindful, he breathes in. Mindful, he breathes out. Breathing in long, he knows, I breathe in long. Or breathing out long, he knows, I breathe out long. Breathing in short, he knows, I breathe in short. or breathing out short, he knows, I breathe out short. He trains thus, experiencing the whole body, I will breathe in. He trains thus, experiencing the whole body, I will breathe out. He trains thus, tranquilizing the bodily formation, I will breathe in. He trains thus, tranquilizing the bodily formation, I will breathe out. He trains thus, experiencing rapture, I will breathe in. He trains thus, experiencing rapture, I will breathe out. He trains thus, experiencing happiness, I will breathe in. He trains thus, experiencing happiness, I will breathe out. He trains thus, experiencing the mental formation, I will breathe in. He trains thus, experiencing the mental formation, I will breathe out. He trains thus, tranquilizing the mental formation, I will breathe in. He trains thus, tranquilizing the mental formation, I will breathe out. He trains thus, experiencing the mind, I will breathe in. He trains thus, experiencing the mind, I will breathe out. He trains thus, gladdening the mind, I will breathe in. He trains thus, gladdening the mind, I will breathe out. He trains thus, concentrating the mind, I will breathe in. He trains thus, concentrating the mind, I will breathe out. He trains thus, liberating the mind, I will breathe in. He trains thus, liberating the mind, I will breathe out. He trains thus, contemplating impermanence, I will breathe in. He trains thus, contemplating impermanence, I will breathe out. He trains thus, contemplating fading away, I will breathe in. He trains thus, contemplating fading away, I will breathe out. He trains thus, contemplating cessation, I will breathe in. He trains thus, contemplating cessation, I will breathe out. He trains thus, contemplating relinquishment, I will breathe in. He trains thus, contemplating relinquishment, I will breathe out. Whenever Ananda, a monk, when breathing in long, knows, I breathe in long, as above, when he trains thus, tranquilizing the bodily formation, I will breathe out. On that occasion, the monk dwells, contemplating the body in the body, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having subdued longing and dejection in regard to the world. For what reason? I call this a certain kind of body, Ananda, that is, breathing in and breathing out. Therefore, Ananda, on that occasion, the monk dwells contemplating the body in the body, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having subdued longing and dejection in regard to the world. Whenever, Ananda, a monk trains thus, experiencing rapture, I will breathe in. When he trains thus, tranquilizing the mental formation, I will breathe out. On that occasion, the monk dwells contemplating feelings in feelings, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having subdued longing and dejection in regard to the world. For what reason? I call this a certain kind of feeling, Ananda, that is, close attention to breathing in and breathing out. Therefore, Ananda, on that occasion, the monk dwells contemplating feelings in feelings, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having subdued longing and dejection in regard to the world. Whenever, Ananda, a monk trains thus, experiencing the mind, I will breathe in. When he trains thus, liberating the mind, I will breathe out. On that occasion, the monk dwells contemplating mind in mind, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having subdued longing and dejection in regard to the world. For what reason? I say, Ananda, that there is no development of concentration by mindfulness of breathing for one who is muddled and who lacks clear comprehension. Therefore, Ananda, on that occasion, the monk dwells contemplating mind in mind, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having subdued longing and dejection in regard to the world. Whenever Ananda, a monk, trains thus, contemplating impermanence, I will breathe in. When he trains thus, contemplating relinquishment, I will breathe out. On that occasion, the monk dwells contemplating phenomena in phenomena, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having subdued longing and dejection in regard to the world. Having seen with wisdom what is the abandoning of longing and dejection, he is one who looks on closely with equanimity. Therefore, Ananda, on that occasion, the monk dwells contemplating phenomena in phenomena, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having subdued longing and dejection in regard to the world. It is, Ananda, when concentration by mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated in this way that it fulfills the four establishments of mindfulness. 2. Fulfilling the seven factors of enlightenment. And how, Ananda, are the four establishments of mindfulness developed and cultivated so that they fulfill the seven factors of enlightenment? Whenever, Ananda, a monk dwells contemplating the body in the body, on that occasion unmuddled mindfulness is established in that monk. Whenever, Ananda, unmuddled mindfulness has been established in a monk, on that occasion the enlightenment factor of mindfulness is aroused by the monk. On that occasion, the monk develops the enlightenment factor of mindfulness. On that occasion, the enlightenment factor of mindfulness goes to fulfillment by development in the monk. Dwelling thus mindfully, he discriminates that phenomenon with wisdom, examines it, makes an investigation of it. Whenever, Ananda, a monk dwelling thus mindfully discriminates that phenomenon with wisdom, examines it, makes an investigation of it, on that occasion, the enlightenment factor of discrimination of phenomena is aroused by the monk. On that occasion, the monk develops the enlightenment factor of discrimination of phenomena. On that occasion, the enlightenment factor of discrimination of phenomena goes to fulfillment by development in the monk. While he discriminates that phenomenon with wisdom, examines it, makes an investigation of it, his energy is aroused without slackening. Whenever, Ananda, a monk's energy is aroused without slackening, as he discriminates that phenomenon with wisdom, examines it, makes an investigation of it, on that occasion the enlightenment factor of energy is aroused by the monk. On that occasion, the monk develops the enlightenment factor of energy. On that occasion, the enlightenment factor of energy goes to fulfillment by development in the monk. When his energy is aroused, there arises in him spiritual rapture. Whenever, Ananda, spiritual rapture arises in a monk whose energy is aroused, on that occasion, the enlightenment factor of rapture is aroused by the monk. On that occasion, the monk develops the enlightenment factor of rapture. On that occasion, the enlightenment factor of rapture goes to fulfillment by development in the monk. For one whose mind is uplifted by rapture, the body becomes tranquil and the mind becomes tranquil. Whenever, Ananda, the body becomes tranquil and the mind becomes tranquil in a monk whose mind is uplifted by rapture, on that occasion, the enlightenment factor of tranquility is aroused by the monk. On that occasion, the monk develops the enlightenment factor of tranquility. On that occasion, the enlightenment factor of tranquility goes to fulfillment by development in the monk. For one whose body is tranquil and who is happy, the mind becomes concentrated. Whenever, Ananda, the mind becomes concentrated in a monk whose body is tranquil and who is happy, on that occasion, the enlightenment factor of concentration is aroused by the monk. On that occasion, the monk develops the enlightenment factor of concentration. On that occasion, the enlightenment factor of concentration goes to fulfillment by development in the monk. He becomes one who closely looks on with equanimity at the mind thus concentrated. Whenever, Ananda, a monk becomes one who closely looks on with equanimity at the mind thus concentrated, on that occasion, the enlightenment factor of equanimity is aroused by the monk. On that occasion, the monk develops the enlightenment factor of equanimity. On that occasion, the enlightenment factor of equanimity goes to fulfillment by development in the monk. Whenever, Ananda, a monk dwells contemplating feelings in feelings, mind in mind, phenomena in phenomena. On that occasion, unmuddled mindfulness is established in that monk. Whenever, Ananda, unmuddled mindfulness has been established in a monk, on that occasion the enlightenment factor of mindfulness is aroused by the monk. On that occasion, the monk develops the enlightenment factor of mindfulness. On that occasion, the enlightenment factor of mindfulness goes to fulfillment by development in the monk. All should be elaborated, as in the case of the first establishment of mindfulness. He becomes one who closely looks on with equanimity at the mind thus concentrated. Whenever, Ananda, a monk becomes one who closely looks on with equanimity at the mind thus concentrated, on that occasion the enlightenment factor of equanimity is aroused by the monk. On that occasion, the monk develops the enlightenment factor of equanimity. On that occasion, the enlightenment factor of equanimity goes to fulfillment by development in the monk. It is, Ananda, when the four establishments of mindfulness are developed and cultivated in this way that they fulfill the seven factors of enlightenment. 3. Fulfilling true knowledge and liberation. How, Ananda, are the seven factors of enlightenment developed and cultivated so that they fulfill true knowledge and liberation? Here, Ananda, a monk develops the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, which is based upon seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, maturing in release. He develops the enlightenment factor of discrimination of phenomena, the enlightenment factor of energy, the enlightenment factor of rapture, the enlightenment factor of tranquility, the enlightenment factor of concentration, the enlightenment factor of equanimity, which is based upon seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, maturing in release. It is, Ananda, when the seven factors of enlightenment are developed and cultivated in this way that they fulfill true knowledge and liberation. Samyutta Nikaya 54.13 5. 328 through 333. Majjhima Nikaya 118. 15 through 43. 3. 82 through 88. Part 10. The Achievement of Mastery. On one occasion, the Venerable Sariputta was dwelling at Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's park. Then one morning he dressed and, taking bowl and robe, entered Savatthi for alms. When he had walked for alms in Savatthi and had returned from the alms round, after his meal he went to the blind men's grove for the day's abiding. Having plunged into the blind men's grove, he sat down at the foot of a tree for the day's abiding. Then, in the evening, the Venerable Sariputta emerged from seclusion and went to Jeta's grove, Anathapindika's park. The Venerable Ananda saw him coming in the distance and said to him, "Friend Sariputta, your faculties are serene. Your facial complexion is pure and bright. In what dwelling have you spent the day?" "Here, friend. Secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, I entered and dwelled in the first jhana, which is accompanied by thought and examination, with rapture and happiness born of seclusion. Yet, friend, it did not occur to me, I am attaining the first jhana, or I have attained the first jhana, or I have emerged from the first jhana. It must be because eye-making, mind-making, and the underlying tendency to conceit have been thoroughly uprooted in your mind for a long time that such thoughts did not occur to you." On another occasion, the Venerable Sariputta said, "Here, friend, with the subsiding of thought and examination, I entered and dwelled in the second jhana, which has internal confidence and unification of mind, is without thought and examination, and has rapture and happiness born of concentration. Yet, friend, it did not occur to me, I am attaining the second jhana, or I have attained the second jhana, or I have emerged from the second jhana. It must be because eye-making, mind-making, and the underlying tendency to conceit have been thoroughly uprooted in your mind for a long time that such thoughts did not occur to you." On another occasion, the Venerable Sariputta said, "Here, friend, with the fading away as well of rapture, I dwelled equanimous and mindful and clearly comprehending. I experienced happiness with the body. I entered and dwelled in the third Jhana, of which the noble ones declare, 'He is equanimous, mindful, one who dwells happily.' Yet, friend, it did not occur to me, I am attaining the third Jhana, complete as above." On another occasion, the Venerable Sariputta said, "Here, friend, with the abandoning of pleasure and pain, and with the previous passing away of joy and displeasure, I entered and dwelled in the fourth Jhana, which is neither painful nor pleasant, and includes the purification of mindfulness by equanimity. Yet, friend, it did not occur to me, I am attaining the fourth Jhana." On another occasion, the Venerable Sariputta said, "Here, friend, with the complete transcending of perceptions of forms, with the passing away of perceptions of sensory impingement, with the non-attention to perceptions of diversity, aware that space is infinite, I entered and dwelled in the base of the infinity of space. Yet, friend, it did not occur to me, I am attaining the base of the infinity of space." On another occasion, the Venerable Sariputta said, "Here, friend, by completely transcending the base of the infinity of space, aware that consciousness is infinite, I entered and dwelled in the base of the infinity of consciousness. Yet, friend, it did not occur to me, I am attaining the base of the infinity of consciousness." On another occasion, the Venerable Sariputta said, "Here, friend, by completely transcending the base of the infinity of consciousness, aware that there is nothing, I entered and dwelled in the base of nothingness. Yet, friend, it did not occur to me, I am attaining the base of nothingness." On another occasion, the Venerable Sariputta said, "Here, friend, by completely transcending the base of nothingness, I entered and dwelled in the base of neither perception nor non-perception. Yet, friend, it did not occur to me, I am attaining the base of neither perception nor non-perception." On another occasion, the Venerable Sariputta said, "Here, friend, by completely transcending the base of neither perception nor non-perception, I entered and dwelled in the cessation of perception and feeling. Yet, friend, it did not occur to me, I am attaining the cessation of perception and feeling, or I have attained the cessation of perception and feeling, or I have emerged from the cessation of perception and feeling. It must be because eye-making, mind-making, and the underlying tendency to conceit have been thoroughly uprooted in your mind for a long time that such thoughts did not occur to you." Samyutta Nikaya 28, 1 through 9, combined. 3. 235 through 238.